Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. I'm Miss Paralegal, here to talk to you about a talk show on blogtalkradio.com, the next phase with Ice and Friends. Tune in each Thursday night, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and 5 p.m. Pacific, a full hour and a half of politics and everything that concerns your community. The comments, guests, and actions of this show has nothing to do with blogtalkradio.com or its sponsors. This commercial has been sponsored by The Next Phase with Ice and Friends.
Good evening. Welcome to The Next Phase with Ice and Friends, heard Thursday, 7 until 8:30 p.m. Central Standard Time, 5 until 6:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and 8 until 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We always like to offer this brief disclaimer in the beginning of the show. Any comments and or opinions you hear on this show do not necessarily represent the views and or opinions of the hosts, sponsors, or Blog Talk Radio. Our brief description of the show is, this show addresses community concerns in regard to designing ways members in communities can increase their abilities to acquire more income. In addition to that, methods to address increasing political strength and impact will also be featured. Financial enhancement, increasing political strength and impact, improving possibilities for combining efforts with others who have similar interests. All these and more poignant concerns will be approached in an entertaining format. There will be musical segments, interesting guests, as well as questions and comments from our listening audience. If you have any interest in improving situations for our youth, such as STEM and incarceration estimates for minority members of the society or any members for the society, reassessing the significance of the spiritual impact, investigating the best possible means of boosting knowledge for improving your health, as well as many pertinent topics too numerous to include in this introduction, just join us as we seek truth on The Next Phase with Ice and Friends. Call us at 347-945-7040. That's 347-945-7040. Or you can email us at blakicz.1@gmail.com. Email at blakicz.1@gmail.com. We highly recommend that you consult professionals in the fields we refer to on this show. The information you hear on this show is meant to be a catalyst to encourage individuals to research topics that they find interesting.
Hey, welcome. Hey, this is Ice, and you are a friend if you happen to be listening. I hope you're listening live. If not, I hope you catch it on the archives. And tonight happens to be, what, March 31st, last day of March, right, 2011. And here in West Texas, it's, wow, it's like 80-some degrees, 81 or so degrees, mostly clear skies. Hadn't rained in about 6 months out here, really dry. And but life goes on. Life goes completely all the way around and around. 347-945-7040 if you want to give us a call. If you want to drop us an email, blakicz.1@gmail.com. And you're always welcome to contact us there. If you have any issues or concerns or any information that you'd like to share with us, we greatly appreciate it. Tonight I want to kick it off with, this is news from a nation in lockdown, and this happens to be Solidarity Watch. I happened to catch this today as I was listening to Tom Hartman. And, yeah, I have some disagreements with him on occasion because he seems to be a proponent of progressive politics. Me, myself, personally, my tag says progressive, but generally I'm just a Democrat, 100% an Obama supporter, period. And I do the best that I can to defend our president. And if you want to challenge me, you got the number, 347-945-7040. I'm not that well-read, not that well-educated, but I have an opinion, and that's what counts on this particular show. The next phase with Ice and Friends. And this particular instance, this story is about John Thompson. I heard, like I said, this on Tom Hartman today, and it was, I believe it was, no, it wasn't. It was on MSNBC is where I heard this guy. As a matter of fact, they interviewed him. can't think of the name of the guy that was doing the show. MSNBC is where I heard this. John Thompson takes a Louisiana injustice from death row to the Supreme Court. This is October the 5th, 2010, by James Ridgway and Gene Casella. Now, I don't know if this completely encompasses all the information about this case. I was hurriedly doing a little bit of research about it so I could pass it on to you. It starts out by saying the model electric chair sitting on the desk of New Orleans prosecutor Jim Williams was like a piece of stranger than fiction Louisiana Gothic. But for John Thompson, it was all too real. Seated in the electric chair were photographs of five African-American men that the New Orleans Parish District Attorney's Office had proudly sent to death row. So these African-Americans had already been executed. And the district attorney, who happens to be at that time Jim Williams, very proud. Now I'm going to show you why that this is interesting. For Jim Williams to be so happy about having executed these, five African-American men. It says, Thompson's picture was dead center. They were trying to kill me, he said last week. That plan was thwarted, but not until Thompson had spent 14 years on death row at Louisiana's notorious Angola prison. His appeals were exhausted and his execution just weeks away before his legal team uncovered evidence that had been intentionally suppressed by the prosecution. Granted a retrial, Thompson was exonerated. So was another of the men in the prosecutor's model electric chair. Of the remaining three, one was granted a new trial, while two others had their sentences commuted to life in prison. These guys could have been killed. I'm sorry, I thought they were. These guys could have been killed. Now, why is that significant? This DA was so proud. He was admiring his work. He had actually convicted these individuals and had five African American men on death row, just waiting to be executed. Anyway, all in all, the prosecutor's bloodthirsty desk ornament has been an emblem of the faulty prosecutions that took place under the 28-year reign of Orleans Parish District Attorney Harry Connick Sr., the father of the singer, actor, and Louisiana icon in his own right. In the past decade, fully a quarter of the men sentenced to death during Connick's tenure have had their convictions overturned, every one of them based on evidence that cast doubt on their guilt, but was hidden from the defense by prosecutors. Thompson is determined that the prosecutor's conduct, which nearly cost him his life, should not go unpunished. I can concur with that. I'm not going to let those MFers get away with it, he declares. It's been a long haul, but on Wednesday, Thompson will be sitting in the Supreme Court watching his lawyers argue in the New Orleans District Attorney's Office must pay millions of dollars in restitution for railroading John Thompson into what they thought would be certain death. Railroading John Thompson into what they thought would be certain death in Angola's lethal injection chamber. At 11 a.m. on October the 6th, 2 days into the new session, the U.S. Supreme Court will hear oral arguments in Connick versus Thompson. After they hear from lawyers representing Thompson, the justices will listen to representatives of the district attorney's office, who will argue that the office can't be blamed for Thompson's faulty conviction and shouldn't have to pay the unprecedented $14 million in damages awarded to him by a New Orleans jury in a civil case. $1 million for each year he spent on death row. Thompson's story, which involves deathbed revelations and last-minute stays of execution, is compelling enough that Matt Damon and Ben Affleck at one time had plans to make it into a feature film in which they would play his lawyers. The project is currently in limbo. There's also a book out about Thompson's experience called Killing Time. The book, Killing Time. But the implications of the Connick versus Thompson, reach far beyond John Thompson's life and even beyond New Orleans. The justice's decision in the case will determine how far a district attorney's office can be held responsible for the misconduct of its own prosecutors. In other words, they will decide whether local governments are legally and publicly accountable for certain miscarriages of justice committed by their employees in and in their names. In person, John Thompson, now 48, has a steady, intense gaze behind wire-rimmed glasses. Interviewed by Mother Jones last spring in New Orleans and again last week by phone, Thompson, who goes by JT, speaks in a calm, measured way, but flashes of anger break through from time to time when he talks about how close he came to being killed at the hands of the state. He is called what New Orleans prosecutors tried to do to him, an attempt at premeditated murder. Thompson was 22 years old and the father of two young sons when he was convicted of murdering a white New Orleans hotel executive. Because he had previously been convicted of attempted robbery, a crime in which he had contended his innocence, JT was advised not to testify on his own behalf at his murder trial. The jury found him guilty and sentenced him to death. In 1985, JT arrived on death row at the notorious Louisiana State Penitentiary at Angola and set about the business of trying to survive. He was helped by his faith and by his friendships with the members of the Angola three former Black Panthers who had been placed in solitary confinement. I was like babysitted by them. They took me on like a big son or something. Who I am now was molded by them, he said. I was blessed to be on the tier around them. Thompson also believes that he was blessed in finding the lawyers who would eventually represent him on appeal. Like many condemned inmates, he began writing letters to attorneys and received what he told us were about 100 rejections. Then help came through the Capital Defense Project at Loyola University in New Orleans. In 1998, lawyers from the project began working on his case together with two pro bono attorneys, Michael Banks and Gordon Cooney, from Morgan, Lewis, and Bocius, a venerable old Philadelphia firm that had become a huge international powerhouse in corporate law. Thompson's lawyers stuck with the case through 11 years of appeals, 7 execution dates. In April 1999, the Supreme Court rejected Thompson's case, and they had to tell their client that the appeal process had been exhausted. An 8th execution date was set for the following month. We had to get back into court, says Nick Trentacosta, who worked on JT's case as director of Louisiana Capital Defense Project, now renamed the Center for Equal Justice. So we got an investigator, and she was able to spend days at the police department going through all kinds of old records. Through that painstaking research, he finally found documents showing the state had the perpetrator's blood type as a result of an analysis of the victim's pants, and clearly showing it was not John's. Trentacosta explained in an interview last week. This was a couple of weeks before the date of his execution. Trentacosta continues, "We moved for a stay of execution. The Louisiana Supreme Court vacated Thompson's robbery conviction, and a state district court changed his death sentence to life in prison because the armed robbery evidence was not reliable. 4 years later, his murder conviction was overturned as well. At his retrial in 2003, Thompson testified in his own defense. The jury took 15 minutes to find him not guilty after 18 years. JT was a free man at the age of 40. But the story was far from over because the exculpatory evidence, the blood test clearly favorable to Thompson's defense, had been hidden, not by any simple mistake or oversight. Prosecutor Jerry Deegan had deliberately suppressed the blood evidence that could have cleared Thompson of robbery charge and profoundly affected his murder trial as well. We found the prosecutor in the armed robbery case had taken the bloody pants of the victim out of the evidence property room and never returned them, said Trinacosta. It was an intentional hiding of the evidence. The law requires prosecutors to turn over the evidence, turn over to the defense any evidence that might be favorable to the accused. Instead, Deegan, let me see, who is this guy, Deegan? JT's case, through the painstaking research, found documents showing Trinacosta, this is a couple of weeks before the SQC moves. Deegan. Oh, here he is. But the story was far from over because the exculpatory evidence, the blood test clearly favorable to Thompson's defense, had been hidden, not by any simple mistake or oversight. Prosecutor, that's who he is. Reputable, ethical, moral, spiritual, a prosecutor. Jerry Deegan had deliberately suppressed the blood evidence. That's kind of like breaking the law. A prosecutor breaking the law that could have cleared Thompson of robbery charges and profoundly affected his murder trial as well. We found the prosecutor. We found the prosecutor in the armed robbery case had taken the bloody pants out of the evidence property room and never returned them, said Trinacosta. It was an intentional hiding of the evidence. The law requires prosecutors to turn over to the defense any evidence that might be favorable to the accused. Instead, prosecutor, moral, legal, religious, no doubt, a fine, upstanding so-and-so man of Louisiana, Deegan, had buried the evidence. A prosecutor, not a thug with his pants down. No, not a thug with his hat backwards. Not a thug with tattoos, but a prosecutor had buried the evidence. Buried it illegally. John Thompson had been on death row for more than a decade when Jerry Deegan, oh, a decade, just 10 years, dying of liver cancer, finally confessed to his transgression. Finally he confessed to his transgression. But instead of making his misconduct public, he told a colleague in the DA's office, oh, fine, upstanding DA's office, I'm sure, Michael Railman. Railman himself sat on the knowledge for almost 5 more years. Another fine, upstanding, moral and ethical, no doubt religious so-and-so man in Louisiana. Until the private investigator came across the telling lab report. Then Railman came forth with Deegan's revelation and signed an affidavit describing what the dying prosecutor had told him. JT's conviction began to unravel. At the time, district attorney, fine, upstanding, moral, ethical, probably religious, you know, social icon, so-and-so man in Louisiana, told the Associated Press that the Thompson case was an isolated example of prosecutorial misconduct. We follow the rules, Connick said. We have an ongoing and continuing obligation to turn over exculpatory evidence, and we do. But in fact, many other convictions have also been overturned, all due to suppression of evidence, said Trinacosta. They all try to portray it as a rogue prosecutor, a fluke, he continues. but Harry Connick used to give awards. Fine, upstanding, moral, ethical, religious, social icon. He said that Harry Connick used to give awards. This, you know, a so-and-so man down there in Louisiana, to prosecutors for successfully convicting people. Connick, Trinacosta said, created a culture where convictions were won at any cost. People then, this is me saying this here, people have died because of these fine upstanding. No, they're not thugs. They don't wear their pants down over their butt and show their underwear, right? They got ties. They got some of the finest suits and shoes, drive the nicest cars, live in the biggest houses. And, you know, you look at the kids with the tattoos and the gold teeth and the hat turned backwards and you turn your nose up and all the time you're shaking hands and hugging these fine, upstanding social, moral, and ethical, religious so-and-so men down in Louisiana. Like Thompson, Trinacosta has called the prosecutor's actions calculated measures to take people's lives away. Murderers. Murderers. But they don't have their hats on backwards. They don't wear tattoos. They don't wear their pants down. But they are nevertheless freaking thugs. Thugs. Rotten thugs. Sick, pathetic, no good, low down thugs, and they're worse than that because they, you'll see. Findings in the Innocence Project in New Orleans back up this assessment. In a 2008 report, the project reviewed the record of Connick's 28-year tenure and found that the practice of suppressing evidence was so prevalent that it could be called a legacy for New Orleans. It was so freaking prevalent that it could be called a legacy. These fine, upstanding New Orleans David Vitters, you know, all the rest of these fine, upstanding citizens down there, these New Orleans people, you know, if you look up the flood of the Mississippi River in 1927, you'll find out about how moral and ethical and fine and upstanding and socially significant these individuals, but they don't wear their pants down. You know, they don't wear tattoos and earrings and their hats on backwards. You know, they ride around with their wives, they go to social events, you know, they drive the nice cars, you know, make the nice money and live in the big houses, and all the time they're murdering people. But is this something that's going to cause you to change the way you look at life? I highly doubt it, because your value system is based on your belief. Your belief system is probably based on the fact that these so-and-so men down in Louisiana are just wonderful, marvelous, tremendously benevolent, philanthropic, all this different kind of stuff, just wonderful people, murderers. Murderers. According to available records, favorable evidence was withheld from 9 of the 36, that's 25%, men sentenced to death in New Orleans Parish from 1973 until 2002. 4 of the men were eventually exonerated, having been released only after serving a collective 43 years of their life on death row. In other words, every 4 men sent to death row by the New Orleans District Attorney's Office from 1973 to 2002 was convicted after evidence that could have cast doubt on their guilt was withheld from them at trial. 4 men, about 11%, were completely innocent. But the statistics show a high rate of incarceration for certain types of people when the real perpetrators walk around with their nice shoes, nice pants, nice coats, nice ties, hair combed to perfection, you know, and riding around in the nicest vehicles, living in the finest homes, and the people that are sentencing are dying for no damn good reason. One of the most innocent men was 16-year-old Sharif Cousins, sent to death row for the murder in 1995, He stayed there until the prosecutor in the case was shown to have both encouraged witnesses to lie on the stand and withheld a videotape that proved Cousins was playing basketball at the time of the murder. The following year, another New Orleans jury sentenced Dan Bright to death for murder. Attorneys later discovered a statement from the FBI, suppressed by prosecutors at the time of Bright's trial, indicating that a confidential informant had identified another man as the killer. These guys were perpetrating a fraud on the public, quote unquote. The foreman of Bright's jury said of one of a set of the prosecutors, and quote unquote, let me sentence an innocent man to death. Unwittingly, people were sentencing people to death because of withholding of vital and significant information that could have exonerated a lot of those victims of the perpetration of the district attorney's office. Where you go for justice? Where do you go for justice? Yet there have been few, if any, consequences for the New Orleans prosecutors who transgressed. Wait, let me slow down and read this. Yet there have been few, if any, consequences for the New Orleans prosecutors. Fine upstanding, moral, ethical, social elites who transgressed professional ethics, broke the law, sent innocent men to death row. Oh, but they were just black men. In 2005, a prosecutor in the Cousins case was found guilty of withholding evidence. The Louisiana State Supreme Court gave him a 3-month suspended sentence. Louisiana. Louisiana. Jim Williams is now in private practice. Thompson's prosecutor, Jerry Deegan, died of cancer. May God forgive this guy for his sins. Mike Rauman, who sat on the deathbed confession, was also briefly suspended, briefly sent back out to ravage, to perpetrate, to be atrocious again by the Louisiana Supreme, not so goddamn Supreme Court, not really that Supreme. He is now a defense. Oh God, can you imagine the defense attorney he is? Harry Connick Sr. rests on his laurels and his son's fame and fortune. I bet his conscience isn't even pricked, not one little bit, because after all they were African-American males. What really angers me, Thompson said after his exoneration, is when these people, the prosecutors, are found out. When those on death row are found to be not, they're found to be totally innocent. Nobody in the prosecutor's office ever faces charges. Nobody has to pay a slap on the wrist for malfeasance, and then they're back at work doing the same old thing, unquote. Nick Trinacosta agrees. As it stands, there are no deterrents to these prosecutors, he said. You know, if they, quote unquote, if they get caught withholding evidence, so what? Nothing happens to them. But with the help of his lawyers, Thompson has sought to achieve justice through a different route. In 2005, he sued Connick Williams, the current district attorney, Leon Cannizzaro, and the office of the DA. The state refused to settle the case, so it went to a jury, which awarded JT a record $14 million in damages. The state of Louisiana quickly appealed the verdict, which it claims will bankrupt the DA's office. It needs to be bankrupt, in my opinion. State and federal appeals courts ruled in Thompson's favor, up to the Federal Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, which handed down a split decision. hearing, the United States Supreme Court agreed to hear Connick versus Thompson in its fall 2010 session. According to the brief filed by Thompson's lawyers, the court will have to decide whether there is significant or sufficient evidence to find the district attorney was deliberately indifferent to the need to train, monitor, or supervise his prosecutors regularly regarding their obligations to hand over evidence favorable to the defense. It's simply, in simple terms, the justices will have to determine whether the DA's office can be held liable for illegal and unethical contact by one of its prosecutors on the theory that the office failed to adequately train its employees. In 1963, Supreme Court case called Brady versus Maryland found that the suppression of exculpatory evidence by the prosecutors violates the defendant's constitutional right to due process. But Connick versus Thompson could determine what kind of recourse the defendants have when their established rights under Brady are violated. Individual prosecutors already enjoy immunity from lawsuits in most instances. This week, the court might effectively give local DA's offices immunity as well. It's not surprising then that Connick versus Thompson has brought in a slew of amicus briefs in support of Thompson's position. A joint brief from the ACLU and the Southern Poverty Law Center describes what was done to Thompson as a shocking and grievous constitutional injury. If municipal DA's offices are not held liable, it argues, innocent victims of this type of prosecutorial misconduct would have no remedy whatsoever. If Connick wins on the grounds that the DA's office is not responsible when its prosecutors withhold evidence, that it will be impossible to recover damages because the prosecutors are entitled to absolute immunity under Supreme Court precedent, said Katie Schwartzman, who is legal director for the ACLU of Louisiana and one of the signatories of the amicus brief, in an email to us last week. Because the court is only considering the facts that in the Thompson case and not the full record of New Orleans Parish DA's office, it may not also find there is insufficient proof of negligence. If Connick wins on the grounds one incident is not enough to establish office liability, although we think there was more of a record than that in this case, then further litigation will be difficult, if not impossible, says Schwartzman. So while the stakes in the case are high for John Thompson, they are higher still for the next accused person to be tried and convicted by a prosecutor who is hiding evidence that might have freed him. A ruling in this guy's favor who had withheld evidence, his office had withheld evidence that would have exonerated several death row inmates. A ruling in Connick's favor would deny him any recourse and send a message to DAs that there are no consequences, even for framing an innocent man. No, the only consequence should be your damn conscience, should be your understanding of morality and ethics. But these guys obviously have none of that. Thompson is already thinking about the predicament of the next innocent man. When he was freed from prison, he said he was more fortunate than most. I had a wife, I had a house, I had a job as an assistant at Center for Equal Justice, working with clients on death row. I worked for 2 years, said Thompson. I had a solid foundation. Most guys did not have that. Guys were coming home struggling in Louisiana. Prisoners, lucky enough to be exonerated or released with nothing more than $10 and a bus ticket and no support dealing with material and psychological legacy of wrongful imprisonment. So there's no counseling for them, not even any counseling to help them to readjust to what's happened to them. Not even that small consideration for them or their families after going through such a horrendous situation. No. Not even that, okay? So following his release, Thompson founded Resurrection After Exoneration, RAE, a group that tries to provide this missing support. At first, RAE focused on providing skills that would help them find jobs. Then, said JT, I decided to have living quarters, a residential area where they live for 6 months to get readjusted to society, to help them to take time and figure things out. Downstairs, we have computers, workshops. We try to bring in as much education as we can. Thompson also wants RAE to represent the voice of innocence, to be a place where the exonerated can tell their stories. And amazing, it's amazing how powerful these stories are. Thompson wants some of RAE's programs to be open to anyone coming home from prison. A settlement of $14 million would finance his ambitious plans, and then some. But he's gotten some modest grant funding and his confidence that RAE and he will carry on with or without the money that's at stake in the Connick versus Thompson case. Whatever the Supreme Court said, Thompson said, I'll be straight with that. But he intends to complete the journey he began on Angola's death row when the court hears oral arguments for an hour on Wednesday morning. He said, I'll be there. You know, I was as I listened to this story today, what I found out was that the Supreme Court had dismissed the charges and they had denied him his $14 million settlement. So, you know, I listened. Oh, there's a call. I have a call. Let me get you on here, caller number 773. Can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Who am I speaking with? Hello? Hello, can you hear me, 773?
Yes, I can.
Okay, who am I speaking with?
You're speaking to Oyami.
Oh, my brother. Ah, dude. Hey, man, how you doing? My brother Oyami. I saw Chad. I was just in the room. Thank you, brother, for calling through. Did you hear any of what I was talking about just a minute
ago?
Yeah,
that's fascinating, yes.
You know what led me to it, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah, man. And some people think that is just simply a piece, but that happens all across this country.
Yep. You know, I tell you what, brother. You know, I'm this guy was denied, man, and I missed that article. I wish I could pull it up right quick, but that was the interesting part. He was denied. He was it was a 5-4 decision. And Ruth Bader, did you hear about it?
Oh yes.
Yeah, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, I heard wrote a rather scathing brief. What do you call it? A dissension or whatever you call it. Man, I tell you,
opinion, yes.
Huh?
Yeah, dissenting opinion. Yes.
Dissenting. Oh man. You know, and I was going right on next to you know who, and I had pulled that story up. And, you know, but it just shows, you know, bro, how pervasive this stuff is, Oyami, you know. And you know that. I know you do. And you just bust in here, man. You just do your thing because you know me, you and me. I'm brief.
Okay. Yeah, man, yeah. And I guess at some point people you know, they call it the NIMBY syndrome, you know. Yeah, like it don't happen in my backyard.
Right. Not in my
backyard. Right. But it's happening, but we don't pay attention to it until it gets to that point where we are confronted with it.
Right.
And either some member of our family or some close friend. And I think that it might be because we've become complacent and perhaps even passive in the past several years.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't realize that the new plantation is now the prison. But that's and in keeping with that, you know, without, you know, moving you off of your square, that
you know, man, you don't move. I don't have
that's
a
one of the,
I'm with you.
that's one of the reasons I called in, because of an event that is current.
Right.
I guess, you know, I sent information around to people to kind of advise them of what's going on, and you get to a point where you begin to realize that you're like Cassandra on the wall telling the people of Troy to beware of Greeks bearing gifts, and people still remain complacent and passive to it. But in this case, right next door to Louisiana is the great state of Texas.
Watch it. That's where I live.
I know. I mean, that's an accident of birth. Okay. But what happened in I'm saying this facetiously, but in one of my favorite towns, East Texas, Paris, Texas, has another significant event that sounds as though it's going to go along those same lines. Just for a little background, about 4 years ago, maybe five now, young lady was sentenced to an indeterminate sentence of 7 years and placed in the Texas Youth Commission's the Texas Youth Commission's authority. And it was because we saw the ridiculousness of the charge that people kind of came together and said that this does not happen. It should not happen to a young child. But one of the things that kind of bothers me is that what I kind of shared with people from my own personal experience with these kinds of cases is that if you don't remain vigilant, it'll pop up again. And once we worked, across the internet, people worked hard to get that young lady removed, and I'm proud to say that she's at the point now where in another year she'll be graduating from college.
Congratulations.
And that's because, that's because we gave her that chance.
Right.
It mattered to us.
Right.
But we have been inundated over the past several years with so much information that suggests that crime now has a black face.
Exactly.
And because it has a black face, we realize, although we black, we know we don't do nothing, so it doesn't have any impact on us. In this case, there's a young man, well, I can't call him young man, but relatively young man, about 20 years ago. About 20 years ago, this brother was involved in a hunting accident. And as a consequence of that, he had to amputate both his legs. And they also did what's in medicine is called a penectomy. They removed his penis. And all of this is critical because he does not have, you know, once you remove all of those things, there's an astounding lack of sexual desire. Okay. Just hold that in the back of your mind, because what I want to do is present to you why this is so critical. Shaquanda Cotton was the first person that I knew of that actually came into conflict, totally innocent, came into conflict with the justice system in one particular town that's notorious for how it deals with people of African ancestry, and that's Parrish, Texas, Lamar County. Shortly after Shaquanda was released and her family began to undergo all of the attacks by everyday citizens in Paris and in Lamar County. There was a young man who was dragged 440 feet in a pickup truck with two white guys that he usually got to drinking with. He was, you know, he was an incorrigible, but, you know, and the guy was driving the pickup truck, had shot a white boy about 6 years earlier in the face twice and got manslaughter.
Mm.
The Texas Rangers caught this young man in Wichita, Kansas, trying to clean off the bottom of his truck at a truck stop. And the people at the truck stop called the police. They contacted the Texas Rangers. They came up there and picked the man up.
Mm.
There was bits of fabric from the boy's clothing, bits of his flesh. And what happened was that they brought that boy back to Paris, Texas.
Mm.
The district attorney, who had been his defense attorney in the first case where he was given manslaughter, said recused himself of the case, and they brought in somebody from Dallas, Texas. They located a truck driver who said, yeah, I was driving down that road at that time. I heard a bump, but I didn't know what it was, so I kept on going.
Mm-hmm.
They checked his truck. There was nothing on his truck. They said, well, I cleaned my truck since that time. That boy got off. Brandon McClellan did not receive justice. Okay?
Right.
Now you have Bobby Yates, who is in Paris, Texas, who had a young white girl, about 5'5", two strapping young white boys knock on his door and say, I'm sorry, we don't have any way of getting inside of our home.
Mm-hmm.
Could we use your phone? They were clearly under the influence of what was later discovered to be meth, methamphetamines.
Uh-huh.
And they were trying to rob him in his home because he is in a wheelchair and he is on stumps, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He called the police and asked them to get these people out of his home. The police arrived, and they promptly, after a short discussion, arrested him for criminal sexual assault.
Hmm.
And that was about 2 years ago.
Mm.
And as a consequence, because he was under criminal sexual assault, under those charges, he got kicked out of public housing.
Wow, okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not trying to say that he may have done what they said. How could he commit sexual assault?
Yeah.
Well,
mm-hmm.
the young lady said he put his hands under her dress and commenced a rubbing on her vaginal area.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a lot of questions. I mean, if someone touches you down there,
right,
the natural autonomic response is to jump away, to back off, to say something about it.
Mm-hmm.
Two young men in that room did not say anything.
Hmm.
She did not say anything. But anyway, I don't want to get into questions.
No, listen, let me tell you what, brother. You know what? It's 12 minutes till 8, my time, and I'm on until 7:30. I mean, 8:30, okay?
Okay.
And, Ola, let me tell you something, brother. This is what this is about. This is exactly what this is about. So don't feel have any problem with being encumbered by time. You know, let me throw let me say this first, and I want to thank Miss Paralegal, a lovely young lady. I've never met her, but she is such a wonderful individual. I really appreciate her assistance. Let me throw my little promo out there, Brother Ola. Don't you go anywhere, please. And,
okay.
We'll be right back right after this.
Okay.
Welcome. I'm Miss Paralegal, here to talk to you about a talk show on blogtalkradio.com, The Next Phase with Ice and Friends. Tune in each Thursday night, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 5 p.m. Pacific, a full hour and a half of politics and everything that concerns your community. The comments, guests, and actions of this show has nothing to do with blogtalkradio.com or its sponsors. This commercial has been sponsored by the Next Phase with Ice and Friends.
And let me throw this little bit of information out there as well. The number, if you want to give us a call, is 347-945-7040. If you want to participate, that's fine. If you want to come in the chat room, that's fine. The Chatologist and Brother Alpha are in the chat room. Brother Alpha, you're welcome to call through if you choose to. You know that, Chatologist, you as well. And I have on the phone one of my favorite friends. I've never met this brother, but I'm a student. And I really appreciate it. I've been knowing him for several years, and this guy is an amazing talent. And I mean, he puts his action where his conversation is, and that's what I appreciate about him. And I can only hope that we grow closer as time goes on, Brother Oleyemi. Sister Rabia Ahmed, SMART to change, .org. Sister Rabia Ahmed always says, "You say his name wrong." I'm like, you say it, Brother Ola, because I appreciate you, man. Thanks for coming through, and you continue on with whichever direction you want to go to, because I really want to tie this into a lot of other things. You know, there are so many other things that this can be tied to, but please continue on in whatever vein you choose to, and if we don't finish today, we can come back next week.
Sounds great to me. And Brenda Cherry and Nancy Lockhart, and people may know Nancy Lockhart, and mm-hmm. she's also working with us on this. Nancy was she was the catalyst for getting the Scott sisters out of prison in Mississippi. The sister is in another part of the country. She's in South Carolina. I'm in Illinois, mm-hmm. and of course Brenda Cherry is in the Belle of the Beast. Although right now she's in Houston. But here's the point that I wanted to kind of make, and to tie that in with what you were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, by my estimation, by the research that I've done, there have been at least 20 cases over the past 3 years that address the issue of prosecutorial misconduct.
Mm.
See, when prosecutors pick a criminal charge to file, they need only have probable cause or reasonable belief that the suspect committed the crime.
Mm.
And this is a very, very low standard that creates a lot of room to pile on the most severe charges in an attempt to bully the defendant, right?
Right.
Into a plea bargain.
Right, exactly.
Because
Brother
Ola,
would you speak? Go ahead, yeah. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Now, I want you to speak on that, what you were talking about, court-appointed attorneys.
Yeah. Well, after Bobby Yates was charged, he was given a court-appointed attorney. It's difficult to understand if you don't live in a town like this. There are no black attorneys practicing in front of the Lamar County Circuit Court.
Mm-hmm.
None.
Mm-hmm.
There's not even a black attorney in town.
Mm-hmm.
The closest black attorney is in Fort Worth, Texas, about 2 hours away.
Oh, okay.
Okay? And mm-hmm. that court-appointed attorney tried to convince Bobby Yates to go into a plea bargain. He said, "Look, we can get you off with 5 years, 6 years, whatever he said to him. We can get you off with that. We're just taking a plea guard. Simply say, I'm guilty, and we'll get you off. And, you know, a good time, you'll be out in a year. You ain't got nowhere else to go anyway." Okay. You know, I'm extrapolating
man.
That, but I know how they talk.
No, I understand.
You know? And when Bobby said, no, I won't, the court-appointed attorney filed a writ to say, remove me from this case.
Mm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, on March the 23rd, Bobby goes allegedly to begin his jury selection.
Mm-hmm.
The judge tried to convince him in open court to plead guilty so they won't have to go through all this. He said no. And, in fact, he wanted to dismiss that attorney. And the judge said, no, you won't. You want to defend yourself, you can. And he told the court-appointed attorney that I won't allow you to withdraw from the case.
Hmm.
Okay, now that's pretty much typical kind of stuff that happens in those kind of cases. But
right.
Here's the killer, and this is what kind of got to me. The judge, in turn, put a gag order on everybody who knows Bobby Yates in Paris, Texas.
Hmm.
Put a gag order.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a man who was receiving X amount of dollars from Social Security Disability.
Mm-hmm.
He cannot talk to anybody. He can't raise any money.
Right.
To get a proper attorney. The cheapest attorney we've been able to locate was 2 hours away, and she said, I won't take the case unless you come up with $25,000.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Before I'll even consider, before I even walk
right.
into court.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody who is connected with the case can actually talk about the case.
Mm-hmm.
No one who knows Bobby Yates can actually talk about the case.
Mm-hmm.
They have essentially cut him away from the possibility of getting any kind of justice. So one of the things that we're trying to do, I'm not gonna make a decision about his guilt or innocence. That's a decision that the court ultimately, a jury ultimately, has to decide.
Right.
But the playing field ought to be at least, if not at least level, make it a little bit less steep.
Less tilted.
You know? And so what we're looking to do
mm-hmm.
is to get people to sign a petition
right.
that we can send to the Justice Department.
Right.
So that they can begin to come in and investigate
mm-hmm.
true prosecutorial misconduct
mm-hmm.
in the county of Lamar
mm-hmm.
in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we find is that more and more black people, men, primarily men,
mm-hmm.
a few women here and there, are going to jail for whatever other. If they don't like you, that's it. You go. They're just waiting. Now, I mean, if no matter what happens to Bobby Yates, we have to make sure that if there's going to be justice meted out in towns like this, that it ought to be at least on a level playing field.
Right.
And so the problem is we have to essentially check the prosecutor's power by making him present some kind of preliminary case especially ones without a defense attorney.
Right, exactly.
Because the prosecutor gets to decide what witnesses call, what questions to ask, and we have to make, and so that whole process is kind of one-sided. And I'm simply suggesting we ought to be able to require prosecutors to tell jurors about the evidence that might help the suspect.
Right. The alleged purpose. Yeah. You know what,
right,
brother? Let me mm-hmm. bust in here on you for a second, and let me say again, welcome to Ice and Friends, the next phase with Ice and Friends. If you want to give us a call, feel free to do so 347-945-7040. But Brother Lot, here's and as far as the topic goes, we just roll. We roll with the topic. That the topic today happens to be about justice misconduct of elected officials. And when I say elected, I mean people that get voted, quote unquote, voted in. So if you think your vote doesn't count, then obviously it does count. But you know what, Brother Lot? When I was president of NAACP when I was in my 30s, and one of the things, you know, we ran into the same thing, and I'm out in West Texas, and we ran into the same thing in the town I was raised in. Not exactly the same thing, but it's very similar. As a matter of fact, I went and talked to the sheriff one day, and it was really comical. I mean, it was comical, but the this guy's like 6'2". I'm like 5'11". This dude's like 6'2", probably about 2.5". You know, with a 38 on his hip, and man, he had a cowboy hat. He was walking, talking noise. And you know what? The more he talked, the more entrenched I got in my mind, because I was so determined, and I was, there to. There was suspicion that there had been some prisoner harassment in the county facility there, and these parents knew me, and I knew the guys that were, that were locked up, and so I had only gone there just to inquire. Now, the thing of it is that they've done such a very sweet job at literally destroying those types of mechanisms, the EEOC, NAACP, and other organizations. And what I found was that there are always, even when I would go to the school system, there were some problems that were happening in the school system. And I would go to investigate or represent one individual. And the thing is that collectively there were many incidents, but they were so isolated that there was no clearinghouse. There was no way to have a record of where you could develop a sequence of events, you know, and a preponderance of evidence or incidents.
Sure.
And you know there is that group that. I can't remember the name of it. You know, I can pull it up right quick. The Concerned Citizens for Racial Equality, CCRE,
yes.
Right?
Yes, CCRE.
And go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's it. That's it.
Okay, and here's my point is that, you know, I'm into the problem, which the problem is that we don't have sufficient representation. Actually, except for a few individuals like yourself and Sister Cherry and that other lady that you mentioned, and a few other people, we're in Texas. I mean, you know, you're in Illinois, which I'm grateful for you, brother. I really am, because you came all the way to Texas when Shaquana was in, had her problems, and man, you very well represented us and all of us at large. And I appreciate it. But the point of it is that there are maybe not just hordes, not just millions of people who, you know, you call it NIMBY, not in my backyard. I call it WIIFM, what's in it for me, the largest FM station in the world, WIIFM. But the point of it is that there are so many people who are so isolated. The same vein of injustice is the same vein that ran through Wisconsin.
Yes.
The same vein that's running through Ohio,
exactly.
Michigan.
Exactly.
You know?
But Bobby ain't in her backyard, in their backyard. Shaquanda wasn't there. And besides,
right.
You know, crime has a black face, man.
Oh, yeah. That's great. You know what?
It's
excellent marketing. It's an excellent marketing ploy.
Sure.
You know? All you have to do, if you want to get something defeated, put a black face on it. It was interesting, even all the way back to Reagan, is whenever he wanted to decrease unemployment, benefits and welfare benefits, he would sit there tell tales about welfare queen, so forth, so on. And then as soon as people bought into it and approved it, then he would lay them off. And they would be in need for the very resources that they, Ms. Quiet Storm is here. Hey, welcome, welcome, welcome. They would be in the dire need of the very things that they have voted against. And it's the same thing in Wisconsin. You know, let me throw this in, Brother Olan, and then I shut my mouth again. But I was listening to people talking about this one guy I heard on Ed Schultz's show today, and he was talking about that, you know, why he's mad at Obama, because Obama wasn't as interested in Wisconsin as he is in the people in Libya, and why didn't he stand up for them? Like, the people in Wisconsin voted this guy in. The people in Libya don't even have a vote. They're under a dictator. The people in Wisconsin voted and trusted these Republicans. I don't negotiate with Republicans. Vote them out. Get rid of them. But that's just me. And I had to throw my little, you know, my little political stuff.
Yeah, I know. I understand. But now, you know, just on the other side of that, Gary Young, who is the district attorney,
right,
is a Democrat.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, he's a Democrat.
Oh,
so
my God.
So what it really boils down to is that, you know, perhaps he has inclinations to become governor after Rick Perry. I don't know. That's why I personally don't look at it as simply Republicans or Democrats, although...
Okay, makes sense. They're only Democrats
by the
political
population.
Oh,
right.
They're still
the same zebra, whether he got black stripes and white, whether he's black with white stripes or white with black stripes. They're still the same zebra. Okay? It doesn't make any difference. And so you can find a Haley Barbour, Michelle Bachmann. They're Republicans, but we can't forget that there was once a George Wallace who was a Democrat.
Absolutely.
For that reason, I'm really cautious about, you know, indicting
political
one as opposed to the other, because in my mind, all these decisions that are being made that have impact are first informed by race. And it doesn't matter whether you're Democrat or Republican. If you're black, you're already a criminal.
Right. Yeah. What do you say? Crime has a what?
Crime has a black face. You know, you can look at any television and any television news program, and almost immediately, crime is essentially something done by black men or black women.
Right.
So for me, I'm concerned about the kind of legal ethical codes that are not being enforced by state bars, and
right,
mostly because prosecutors argue that any of those kind of changes that are made regarding plea bargaining, etc., would tie their hands,
right,
unnecessarily. But there are some places, however, where prosecutors are willing to open themselves up to scrutiny under these kinds of cases. Like Milwaukee, San Diego, even Charlotte, North Carolina. They're letting a group called it's a nonprofit group called the Vera Institute. The Vera Institute of Justice. Let me say that correctly.
Okay.
They examine all of these charges, these prosecutors' charging decisions regarding plea bargains for discrepancies in how black and white suspects are being treated.
Huh.
Okay.
Okay.
And because there is a the bottom line is this: a prosecutor's job, after all, is not to win, but to see that justice is done.
Right. Right.
And so, if someone is guilty, then they should be
Right. Feel the full impact, yeah.
Feel the full impact of the law. But when it is because of political decisions people have made,
okay,
because that they make these. I see you got a really unique situation a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
These are poor people.
Mm-hmm.
And I submit that Michael Jackson,
mm-hmm.
that O.J.
Mm-hmm.
would be in jail for the initial crimes that they were charged with had they not had the money to fight those cases.
Right.
And here we have situations where people who are allegedly our attorneys
mm-hmm.
refusing because there's no money in it for them.
Mm-hmm.
So they're in collusion with these prosecutors.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
you know what?
I've talked to several law firms notorious for fighting, quote, injustice.
Mm-hmm.
They won't touch a single case in East
mm-hmm.
Texas.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't
mm-hmm.
come to the aid of Shaquanda. They wouldn't come to the aid of Brandon McClellan's mother. And they're not
mm-hmm.
coming to the aid of Bobby Yates.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I tell you what, Brother Eli. Here's what I'm going to say, and is that you've stated our situation, and you know I'm going to tell you this, you don't know how happy I am that you finally, you know, the invite's been out there forever and a day, but you know, and let me say again, thanks to the Chatologist, Brother Alpha, Miss Quiet Storm. Thank you, dear lovely lady. Miss Quiet Storm, she was on, you remember she was on, you know, on our one of our little networks there for a while. I don't even mention her name. But anyway, hey, Brother Eli, would you consider this? I'm asking you this in front of all three people. But, would you consider this? Can we work toward, because what you said about the co-ops for this, the co-op, you know, and I would mm-hmm. like to even explore that at your convenience if you ever have the time again. But let's begin. This is the beginning again, you know, along with throwing in with the what was that congressional? I mean, not what was it? I said the. Concerned Citizens for Racial Equality and any other organizations out there, any other organizations,
mm-hmm.
you know, can we just form a nucleus and go beyond the chat room and, you know, I'll do whatever I can.
Well,
I mean, not whatever, you know, whatever. You say, you do what, you know, I've done all I can, well, then do what's required. I will do what's
right.
required for us to get this thing together. If you don't mind, I appreciate you coming back any, you know, any time and all the time. Let's just start working our ways, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah.
Huh?
Well, here's what I see. There's a distinct possibility that, I mean, it goes across the country. There's a sister out in California who has asked me the same kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I broached the subject with Ms. Lockhart. I've talked to
mm-hmm.
Brenda about it. There are people here in my area, excuse me, who have the same kind of concern.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a point that I want to make, because it's not an easy road to travel. It's a Sisyphean, you know, meaning, you know, in Greek mythology there was this character Sisyphus, who rolled the rock up to the top of the hill,
mm-hmm.
and right before it got there, rolled back down again. So we keep pushing it up and down, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What we have on, you know, in terms of this kind of issue is a plate of ham and eggs, a breakfast of ham and eggs. Okay.
Yep.
And on that plate, you know, you got some ham, you got some eggs, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Some people are like the chicken, and some people are like the pig.
Right, exactly.
You know.
Yeah.
And the difference is, the chicken was involved, but the pig
mm-hmm.
was committed.
Absolutely, Absolutely.
And what we got to have are people who are committed to justice for our people.
Right.
Not just simply involved, well, I'm going to throw an egg on this one,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
put a pile of cheese grits over to the side. But we've got to have people who are really and truly committed.
Right.
And I know some people don't eat pork, all that. That's not the point. The point is that some people are committed to making
right.
sure that our children have an opportunity to achieve, to grow, to develop.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to begin to clear out social space for ourselves
mm-hmm.
to protect our young men and women.
Right.
And we can't be passive about it.
Right.
Now, I'm going to end with this because I told folks I was going to call down to Houston. They're having a conference down there now.
Okay, okay.
That's why Brenda couldn't come on, Brenda Cherry.
Could
not
okay.
come on.
Mm-hmm.
And so I told her that I would come on, at least say a few words. It looked like I didn't take up all the words. But here's what I want to...
Mm-hmm. You're welcome anytime.
You know, but what I think that we have to begin to do is to move to develop a cadre of attorneys, and not just simply
mm-hmm.
attorneys now, because
mm-hmm.
attorneys are the performers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
we really need more than I mean, even more so than attorneys. We need a cadre of bright, sharp, adroit paralegals who can investigate and come up with the solutions to the issues that we're confronted with so that
mm-hmm.
that attorney, whoever he is, can come in and argue these cases effectively.
Mm-hmm.
What we don't have are really good paralegals, because from my experience, paralegal does work. The attorney goes in and argue the work based on what the paralegal found.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we got to do is begin to build up a cooperative in each of our states, because all the states have, you know, various laws.
Right.
But
mm-hmm.
there's one thing that everybody should realize is that the Constitution requires a grand jury to indict a suspect before that person can be tried for a felony.
Right.
And half of the states have a similar setup.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't even occur in a place like Texas.
Huh.
It doesn't occur. And, you know, theoretically, this
mm-hmm.
ordinary group of people make him present at least a preliminary case.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's without a defense attorney, but makes him present a preliminary case.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones who ought to finally make a decision about cases like this. We're talking about a
right.
felony, aggravated
right.
criminal sexual assault.
Right, exactly.
For a
yep.
man who ain't got no legs,
mm-hmm.
and there are mitigating circumstances,
mm-hmm.
and I can say this, we actually have the tape when he called.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
But without an attorney in
mm-hmm.
in place to present that evidence,
mm-hmm.
they got to make him plea bargain.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Is it true that I don't know if it was you. I think it was you. No, was it you or did I read this? Well, it may have been you that told me this, that they were trying to deter some of the individuals involved by the threat of prosecution for practicing law without a license?
No, that wasn't me.
Okay, then I read that somewhere or something.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a sad, sad shame because,
mm-hmm.
You know, these are some of the, you know, some of the, like you were saying, a paralegal, some of the more technical. But you know what? Some of the more astute individuals that I've ever seen who have a very profound grasp of litigation, or people
mm-hmm.
that these there's some brothers that's incarcerated. I can promise
right.
you that I've seen.
Right.
It was an instance that happened to me. They made we talked with with an attorney, and the attorney dismissed me instantly. It's like, oh, you just wanted a jailhouse lawyer like that, right?
Right.
That attorney, we got the case in court, and the attorney used the same information that I got from a guy who was incarcerated, who had done some research on this particular case. He told this judge about the case because the DA was, you know, he was walking and talking, looking real shiny and bright. And when this DA told this judge what that guy in prison had told me that I passed on to him, the judge got up. I didn't even know they could walk through the back of their deal, wherever they were sitting behind their, whatever you call that thing. He walked through the back of it and came back with a book, opened it up, and found this particular instance and told that DA that he didn't have another word to say. This case is dismissed.
Right.
And I was like, do what? But so some of the best, brightest, some of our resources are, you know, some of the places that we wouldn't expect them to be. And, you know, I think your time may be short, brother, but you just don't know, man. I'm so thrilled that you gave a call through because, I mean, I won't say anything about you on here, but now I can because you've been here. But, you know, I'm just proud to know you, man. You know that. So,
let
that be known.
As
well as there's some people in here, Alpha, Brother Alpha, Sister Chatology, and Miss Quiet Storm. Miss Quiet Storm does a show about abuse and families and this kind of thing and that. And I mean, you know, very
serious
individual. So, brother, don't feel a stranger at all, Olayami. Just any time, man, and all the time, because I still want to talk about what you were doing in Africa. You know, I went back and looked at those pictures, and those pictures were royal blue and gold, and I said green. So, are those girls, you know, the when you were there, I think, taking pictures and whatnot. And man, you know, you just such a fountain of knowledge, and I dude, thank you. That's all I can say. I can boil
it
down.
Thank
you.
I appreciate it, brother. Let me give two commercials real quick.
Thank you.
One is the Homing Dove Primary School in Moyo, Uganda, where I've been working with them for the past 3 years. And that is because a number of the boys and girls there are child soldiers as a result of rebellion in Uganda. That's one thing.
Say that,
we began to teach the people in the community, the teachers, the staff, the children, effective conflict resolution. And they led a 3,000 person march all through that area at the height of that rebel army. And I mean, it was really something. The other thing Homing Dove International Primary School.
Thank you.
Homing Dove International Primary School. It's in Moyo, Uganda. And Moyo, Uganda is about 70 miles east of the Nile River.
I got you.
Yeah, and that was in my Facebook page. I sent you some of those pictures too.
Yeah, you
but
did.
When we did some of the training up there and everything, and well, that's one thing. But my primary concern here, you know, you always got to look at home first.
Mm-hmm.
And so for anybody who is listening, I just ask them to do this one thing. We want to get the Justice Department to come down and investigate, to open an investigation. Ultimately, they do have the capacity to bring people up on charges. And so the way that we can do that is by getting a petition while we still have time with people who may be more amenable to opposition in public office. And that would be to go and just in your search engine, put Justice for Bobby Yates, B-O-B-B-Y, not I-E. Justice for Bobby Yates, Y-A-T-E-S. Justice for Bobby Yates at blogspot.com. We got a web spot where we're going to and over to the right, you'll see it says sign the petition. Put in
right.
the information. Don't worry about whether it clicks or not. And we put it right now. I'm really kind of appalled that of all the people that I've talked to, that few want to take that step and stand up.
Right.
There's a phrase said by Hugo Black. He says that in order for us to be free, we can't be afraid.
Mm-hmm.
We have to stand up. We have to speak out.
Mm-hmm.
And that says it all for me.
Right.
And
right.
So no pawn shop, salt and pepper shaker judge in some backwater town is going to tell me that
right.
I can't speak out on behalf
right.
of one of my people. I just, you know, fortunately, I'm not in Paris, Texas. And when
right.
I get back down there, I'm going to speak out some more.
Well,
because I just refuse to allow these kind of things to happen. Just
and I
saying
appreciate it. And I hope to be
and I appreciate you, man. Because when I didn't have anybody else to kind of turn to, I came to you and you stood up, man.
Nah,
and for that,
hey.
You know, you have my dying devotion, man. So,
you
folks don't know
so
that
bad.
About you. They think you just, but you stand up,
so
and that's what's important to me.
Yeah.
You know,
nah, brother, right. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay.
You're the dude, man. I mean, and when I say that, I don't mean it lightly. And like I say, if you'll come back, and as people can see, this is all the way in Uganda, and this is fighting tirelessly for an individual who otherwise would be totally dismissed from many of our considerations, Mr. Bobby Yates, and that's at blogspot.com.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you said?
Yeah, it's Justice for Bobby Yates. Justice for Bobby Yates. Blogspot.com.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Justice for Bobby Yates. Blogspot.com. Right.
Man, I tell you, I just so much appreciate it. And, you know, we're getting down. Well, of course, I got 3 minutes. You can do it any way you want to do it. Brother Alpha said, great show. I miss his voice. And, brother, like, you got it. We come back sometime.
Sure, man. You know, all you got to do is just yell at me.
Don't say that, because you know I've been asking you. Don't even go there with me, man. You got every Ms. Quiet, Chatologist, Alpha, Brother Olai, y'all got to
uh-huh.
just anytime you come through, anytime, I'd just be so grateful, you know, for you to come through, because you bring
mm-hmm.
such tremendous presence and so much information and encouragement. Thank you so much, brother.
Thank you for the time, and thank you for your listeners, man.
Get out of here. I'm telling you, I'll be here next week. So
okay,
don't go there with me.
Well, listen, brother. You know, one last thing, and this is from I'm a, you know, when I'm at home, I watch movies, right? I get,
right,
you know,
okay.
I'm one of them on the Netflix, and I get them. And so I found this movie. You know, come on, y'all. I got the movie, and I was listening to it. And there was a phrase that I played it back and forth. And
mm-hmm.
what it said was, do not rejoice, O you men, for though the world rose as one and defeated the bastard, the bitch that bore him is in heat again. And that's telling us to be vigilant.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
And that was from a cat named Bertolt Brecht. And Bertolt Brecht and Kurt Weill wrote a thing called Three Penny Opera. And one of the tunes in that was, oh, this shark bites, this teeth there. You know, you remember that tune?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what, do not rejoice, because we have to remain vigilant. And some of us get past it. Well, we made it. We cool. I did it. You know? And I just remember that. Well, brother Ice, you hang tough, man. And all you need to do is, you know, I'll be there with you, man.
We're going to do it. You know, and like I say, anytime, brother, like you decide to come through, I mean, because, like I said, we hadn't even touched the thing about the co-ops. We had there's so many things that we haven't touched, but we need to, you know, keep not dilute our focus. And say that again, Justice for Bobby Yates.
JusticeForBobbyYates.blogspot.com.
Right.
And there's a petition. It's over to the right side. You got to look for it. Mm-hmm. Just sign, you know, follow the lines, and they'll tell you what to do. Mm-hmm. There's the phone numbers there for Brenda Cherry and for Miss McFarland. I'm
mm-hmm.
sorry, God. Yeah. I'm getting people named Miss Lockhart. I'm sorry.
Right, right.
I'm getting the colors different now. I'm
you know
in trouble.
It's no biggie.
You know, like
it's
they say,
no
best
biggie.
2 out of 11, man.
you, man, I'm gonna tell you, I'm gonna hold you to coming back now.
Okay, I will. And when
we
I come back this next time, I'll be prepared to share that information about development of cooperatives, because I think that that's the most effective way for us to move forward.
I appreciate it.
Sure
do. And Brother Olat, thank you so much for calling through.
Thank
and,
you,
and
brother.
Again,
I appreciate you, man.
And man. You take good care. God bless. And we'll be hollering at you. You know I'll catch you on the other side here in a little bit or something.
Good deal.
All right.
Take good care, bro.
Thank
good
you
night, everybody.
Night. Blessings. And, hey, that's been a wrap for us. And let me say, I didn't get a chance to give all my usual information out about the different hosts, and still I have some time on the archive. So let me say that Miss Quiet Storm. Miss Quiet Storm is heard right here on Blog Talk Radio, MSQUIETSTORM. And that's Saturdays at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard, 10 a.m. Mountain, 11 a.m. Central, 12 noon Eastern. Miss Quiet Storm, just put her in the search bar on Blog Talk Radio, and you'll find all the necessary and pertinent information about her, as well as Brother Alpho. Brother Alpho came through earlier. Brother Alpho is heard 2 p.m. Saturday, this coming Saturday, 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, I believe that's right, but look him up on the search block, Brother Alfo, Alfo, on Blog Talk Radio, let me speak out about Sister India DeClaire. I think she's on demand until April the 4th, but she has a very excellent, wonderful show. She's heard on Monday through Saturday at 10 a.m. Central Standard Time. Sister India DeClaire. Sister Navazar, N-A-V-A, and that's India, I-N-D-I-A, D-E-C-L-A-I-R, India DeClaire. And she's on demand right now, I think until April the 4th or so, and take an opportunity to give her a listen. And Sister Navazar, 1 N-A-V-A-X-O-R, 1, Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard, 5 p.m. Central. And she has a wonderful show also. Sister Janice Graham, Our Common Ground, Saturdays, at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central Standard. Janice, G-A-N-I-C-E-G-A-G-R-A-H-A-M. And Sister Chatologist, thank you for coming through. You got your room open over on another venue that I hardly ever mention here, but I really appreciate you being here. Miss Quiet Storm, again, thank you so much for coming through, and I hope that you will feel free sometime to participate, because you know I will if I come through on your place, so... And I just love your show. I think it's great. Anyway, with that said, did I miss anybody or anything? Let me again mention to you, there were so many other things that, but I am so glad Brother Olayami came through. Justice for Bobby Yates, BobbyYates .blogspot.com, signed a petition to get the Justice Department. And if everything's cool, there won't be a problem. If everything's cool, there will be no problem. And let me encourage you, please, to understand that an ounce of prevention is worth a ton of cure. And what you have to do is to pay attention to the issues and get yourself involved. And don't listen to people who suggest to you that it's no need or no reason or there is no use, because there's always a use being involved and informed, and we hope to continue to do that for you in the future. Again, welcome, and thank you for coming through with the next phase with Ice and Friends, heard Thursday 7 until 8:30 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. 347-945-7040 or blakicz.1@gmail.com. And with that said, we will bow ourselves right out of here after this little message.
Welcome. I'm Miss Paralegal, here to talk to you about a talk show on blogtalkradio.com, The Next Phase with Ice and Friends. Tune in each Thursday night, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and 5 p.m. Pacific. A full hour and a half of politics and everything that concerns your community. The comments, guests, and actions of this show has nothing to do with blogtalkradio.com or its sponsors. This commercial has been sponsored by The Next Phase with Ice and Friends.
So they gon' dig in.
Yeah.
Hold up.
Yeah.
Hey. Hey.
I like
to
work
one time of your life. It's the king. Everything on me, it is. Champagne and all. You like that brown? We got that Remy coming around. All right? Everybody want to get clear. Accomplish what they said I'll never do. Or maybe y'all been sleeping, it's losing on me.